When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by Catan's REIT Financial Services. I'm Tim Parisa with Pete Sampson. Today on Monday, a couple days after Notre Dame's 19-14 victory over Pittsburgh. Before we go any further, I just want to remind everybody that we will not have a podcast this Thursday. Our next podcast will be on Monday, October 22nd, as we enter Navy Week. Well, Notre Dame wins a 19-14 game. They move up to number four in the rankings, one of many teams that really struggled this week. Four top 10 teams lost. Notre Dame was not one of them. That's the really good news. It was a struggle offensively. The defense was great, really, after the first series, which, you know, as a result of a special team snafu, that series was allowed to continue, and Pittsburgh converted into a touchdown. But otherwise, the defense was great. Ian Book responded in the second half like he usually does. Julian Okwara dominated the football game on the defensive side, and the 99-yard kickoff return obviously was a special team snafu that can't happen and has happened twice. But, you know, Pete, when you look at all the teams that struggled this past week and some that didn't survive it, it was the second week of October. It was that kind of weekend, and Notre Dame came out of midterms and somehow found a way to win.
Yeah, I mean, they were fortunate to play Pittsburgh this week because it was right. I think Brian Kelly said it after the game, and it was dead on. That was a losing performance against a better team. And Pittsburgh and Navy are both really struggling this year. But I think that kind of performance would certainly get you beat at USC. It might get you beat at Northwestern. It might get you beat at Syracuse. And it could even get you beat at home against Florida State on senior day. So I guess last week I praised Notre Dame for having a really good B performance against Virginia Tech. This was like B minus C plus, and it was a low enough grade that you're not going to be able to get to 12-0 playing that way.
Well, and it's, I mean, the offense was a D and the defense was a, you know, A minus, I guess, somewhere in that range. That's what gives you the grade. And I just want to say this. From here on out, I am not going to underestimate Florida State. I'm just not going to. I refuse to assume that Notre Dame's going to win a home game against Florida State on senior day. We don't know what's going to happen. Now, if it's sleeting rain and ice, I'll feel better about Notre Dame's chances, but I'm not going to underestimate that game. But Julian Okwara is ridiculous, man. I mean, that is a ridiculous football player. He's listed at 241. He looks like he's 220 still. He's stronger than, you know, you see him pulling Kadri Allison, you know, in the run game, pulling him back. He's incredibly strong for his size. You can't block him. You have to hold him, which they did frequently, along with Khalid Kareem. That those two guys get held half a dozen times every game that aren't called. So, and even more so in this game. But, you know, thank goodness that the defense had to absolutely be that stout where they held them for eight straight drives.
Yeah, and I think as we were watching it unfold, you felt like the defense was a little bit on their heels on that first drive, but it was a 17-play, 88-yard drive. So it wasn't like Pittsburgh was snapping off these huge plays. Right. The touchdown run was, you know, there was a bad run fit in there, and there was a pretty big alleyway for Allison to take that in as a wildcat type of look. But, I mean, I thought the defense really start to finish. I would lump the first drive in with everything else that was positive about it.
They did get the stop. Yeah.
I think it was a positive start. And it just stayed positive all the way through the defense. And I completely agree on Okwara. There was a one play. It was a third down pressure. He's rushing from Pickett's right. He ends up sort of falling down, but then somehow jumping from a kneeling position and hitting Pickett. And then the ball, I think, basically hits Coney, or just misses Coney. It's an incomplete pass, but He's playing some of the best football I think that we've seen from a Notre Dame defensive end in a long time. Maybe what Aaron Lynch freshman year type of stuff. Yeah. You know, Stephon Tuitt was a different style.
Yeah, I think Kareem's. I mean, to a large extent, Kareem's right there with him. I know the stats that like the pressures he only has half of what Okorah has, but he has 4.5 sacks. And it's almost like. And hey, that was the first game that Kareem didn't go off with an injury, or did he not go off the field with it?
I think his ankle survived.
Yeah, and so now he has an extra week. But you know, it's almost like when Kareem decides, okay, I'm coming after this guy. He's just that much harder to block. So they're doing some great things up front there, and that's, you know, you're going to have your offensive consistencies. We talk about this, but defensively, you want to be able to count on that defensive line, that pass rush. Every game, and they've been able to do that to this point.
Yeah, that was something I asked Kelly after the game. I really feel like the pass rush is the most reliable thing about Notre Dame. Individually, is probably Julian Love. Collectively, it's probably the pass rush and that defensive line play because whether it's Jerry Tillery getting off blocks and he's too fast for a fullback to sort of wham block him, on a third down run stop. The way the game ended with, I think it went Okwara, Kareem, Hayes, Okwara on 4 straight plays in terms of the pressure they got to pick it. That's just something that Notre Dame can rely on. And as much as the offense is going to be up and down, because I think offenses generally are up and down, I think the defense is going to be really good from start to finish. That will be something that I think Notre Dame can count on through the end of November, whereas offensively, you know, I think there was a lot of questions on Twitter about this. Was there a blueprint of sorts?
We'll talk about more of that in the second segment.
Thrown out against Ian Book. I don't really know the answer to that, but I would say that in my preview on Friday, one of the things I thought Pittsburgh would try to do would be blitz him more. Not nearly as much as they actually did, because through his first 3 starts, Ian Book against the blitz was 13-28. It's a 46% completion percentage. That's a winning proposition if you're a defense.
Right.
Well, on Saturday, I think, and this will probably surprise people, I know it surprised me, the way I totaled it up, Book was 14 of 17 against the blitz for 80. That's an 82% completion percentage. So there were times where I think the impact of Pittsburgh's blitzing on Ian Book was almost more when they didn't do it.
Wow.
When it was a changeup, when Ian Book thought they were blitzing, because at that point, you're looking for that fifth guy coming, but he's not. He's in coverage, and that's like classically you're trying to go against 12 guys at that point. I think that's where Pittsburgh sort of had success by, instead of making the blitz the changeup, making the sort of drop 7 the changeup. And I think that was a really smart move until Chip Long sort of figured it out in the second half.
Yeah. Well, you know, Pat Narduzzi is a great defensive coordinator. I think he's a very average head coach, but a great defensive coordinator, and we shouldn't be surprised, and shame on us for not emphasizing the possibility of this happening.
But that linebacker was out.
I know, I watched too much Pittsburgh film from earlier in the year, and it's like I can only come to the conclusion that this isn't a very good football team. And they had just beaten Syracuse, and maybe we didn't put enough emphasis on that.
And they were blown out by Central Florida and Penn State.
I got you. Like, you know? No, I got you. And that's why we look at, with the way the offense was playing with Ian Book, averaging 46 points per game in his first 3 starts, and then Penn State scored 51, Central Florida scored 45, and they lose their top defensive player, at least in the front 7. You expect that. But, you know, football... Football's a crazy game, and the emotions of it, Notre Dame coming off Virginia Tech and Stanford and midterms, and I know people don't want to hear that, but it's reality.
Brian Kelly didn't want to hear it when I asked him about it.
Yeah, but I mean, it is just reality, and it played out, and I said it last week. Lou Holtz used to talk about midterms all the time. Think about how great his teams were. And they had moments. I would have to go back and chart that exactly as to when they struggled, but he was always worried about it because he felt like his team didn't play nearly as well. So there's definitely something through it. Before we finish up segment 1, I did want to talk about Miles Boykin and Chris Fink in particular, because I don't think too many people would have felt like Chris Fink would be tied for second through 7 games.
And I was surprised when I read that in your tale of the team this morning.
Tied for second in tackles with Elizay Mack. He had another effective game. He's deadly against zones because he finds a crease. He's a tough matchup. They can do jet sweeps with him. You know, he's made it. The throw that Book made, that 26-yard double move up and out.
Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous.
Prior to the Claypool touchdown was just it was a tremendous route and a tremendous throw. The best throw of the day other than the game-winning throw to Boykin. So, you know, I mean, Fink is doing great things. I don't think we could have anticipated that. I figured last year that Chip Long just didn't like Fink and didn't think, you know, he wanted a bigger guy in there, and he didn't have much of a future with Chip Long as an offensive coordinator. But he's emerged, and give Miles Boykin credit. You know, it's a tough matchup. Press coverage isn't something that he's had a lot of success with in his past. He told me that, you know, he was open quite a bit, but Book was under duress a lot, and so he couldn't always find him. But he made the big third and five catch prior to the 35-yard touchdown pass, and he just zipped by Dane Jackson. Jackson held him, but he ran through that, and an absolutely perfect pass for me and Book.
I mean, there's no question. I think that Book's second interception would have been a Boykin touchdown.
Yep, that was another one.
If Kramer didn't, like, give up pressure, and then Book's arm gets hit, the pass gets picked off. At that point, the game, Notre Dame is under some real game pressure. That's the series immediately after the kickoff return touchdown. So I thought that was another interesting dynamic. Drew Tranquil said this after the game, basically. Like, I don't know of a team that's won the national championship that hasn't, you know, trailed in a game or you have been under some real pressure or played this kind of game. And that was basically us today. And I would agree with that. I don't like the, oh, it's hard to win a college football. See, like, everything's okay. Because if you take Alabama out of the mix, great. I mean, they don't have it's not hard for them to win in college football. It was hard for Georgia, but they were at LSU. It shouldn't be that hard to beat Pittsburgh. That would be more of my concern. But I do think there was some real game pressure on Notre Dame in a way that they haven't felt all year. And I thought they comfortably handled it. I mean, the defense could have panicked. They just sort of kept doing what they were doing for four quarters. That was enough. I think the offense needed to find an adjustment, and I give a lot of credit to Chip Long for finding it, because the way that they sort of changed things up with what they were doing with Claypool and Fink was significant. That was not something I think that they've done a whole lot this year, but it was not something that would be really effective against most teams, because most teams aren't sending 7 and 8 guys trying to come after your quarterback.
Claypool's a tough matchup inside or outside. You know, I mean, that's a really tough matchup when he's lined up inside. It's also a testament to the inconsistent program that Pat Narduzzi runs. If you can beat Clemson 2 years ago, and you can beat Miami last year, two number two teams, and then play that way against Notre Dame, then obviously you don't have a consistent program or a consistent message. And so that, to me, that reflects on the coaching staff. But Notre Dame overcame it. We have a lot of other topics we can talk about in this segment, but then we'd be stepping on segment two. So we'll wrap this one up and come back with questions from our readers.
Catanzarit Financial Services is a safe harbor providing guidance to clients on anything that affects them financially, including retirement planning, asset management, and estate planning. Catanzarit Financial Services also leads retirement planning classes in South Bend and Elkhart, Indiana. Log on to CatanzaritFinancialServices.com.
We're back. Segment 2, Irish Illustrated Insider, burning up the boards. The first question: Irish, I was tailgating. How much can we reasonably expect the offensive line to, quote, grow and improve, end quote, over the rest of the season?
It's a good question. I mean, without Alex Bars, it's not going to be anywhere near what it was. They're trying to make do. They're trying to make do right now. I mean, they're trying to find a rhythm with Trevor Ruhlin in the mix. And I don't think it's all on Trevor Ruhlin, because I don't think, I mean, as everybody knows, I just don't think Tommy Kramer's playing very good and consistent football. I didn't think Hainsey had a real good game against the outside, you know, pass rush from Pittsburgh. And Eichenberg Eichenberg takes one step forward, one step back usually. And that's what happens when you're a first-time starter. It happens to, you know, just about everybody but Quentin Nelson. But yeah. I don't think he was going one step forward, one step back his first year. But it's going to be difficult. Something I threw out in the tail of the tape today, I really like the way Aaron Banks moves. Now, he's got no body of work, so he has no experiences to draw upon. And I'm not saying necessarily in place of Rulen. I'm saying maybe you can, if you want to rotate a redshirt freshman at two spots, maybe you can do that. I mean, maybe it'll keep Tommy Kramer a little bit fresher. And I like, I mean, not only do I think he's fairly light on his feet, but I think he shows good change of direction. And those are two really important things for an offensive lineman. So it's just snippets. And, he came in the first series of the second quarter and the first series of the third quarter. I don't know if I missed him.
I think he might have even played in the first. Well, that would be the second quarter. I was going to say their second Notre Dame second drive was actually at the start of the second quarter. So I remember him being in early, and I read what you wrote in the tail of the tape. I agree that maybe with the bye week, more time to sort of monkey around with that. Navy, as you noted, is terrible against the run. Maybe there's something you can work on there. There's got to be. There's something there to take advantage of with Aaron Banks the rest of the year. How much they take advantage of it, I don't really know. But, I mean, you look at these are Dexter Williams runs. Minus one, minus two, three, one, three, four, two, three, minus two, 13, three, four, zero. I mean, that's a guy who was averaging 9 yards a carry going into this game and 100.
And you know if he has the slightest crease.
Yeah, you do not need to give him a whole lot of room. And that is how little room he had to run. And yeah, some of that had to do with Pittsburgh having more guys than Notre Dame could block, but a lot of that had to do with Pittsburgh having as many and Notre Dame not blocking them. And that's a issue that they have to get figured out on the offensive line first and foremost.
You know, look, offensive lines improve the more they play together. So they're seven games in. They need the Navy game. They need to, you know, I'll be very interested to see how Chip Long calls that game. Brian Kelly seems to be trying to tug him in the other direction of throwing the football. Chip Long seems like the kind of guy that will be resistant to that, so I think that's a good thing. You know, we've talked about this in the past, and I wrote about it again today. I think that you have to absorb some short yardage runs in order to stick to what you need to do as a balanced offense, and that means running the football. You've got to get this line to be a better run-blocking team. Well, hell, you got to get them to be a better pass-blocking team now, too, because that's an issue as well at times. So, you know, it isn't anything. Notre Dame isn't throwing their hand. And I kind of get where Brian Kelly's come from when he said on Sunday that, you know, nobody's panicking with the run game in their office. And I get that from the standpoint that, hey, man, you still almost have half the season. You go back to work, you have a bye week, they'll get rested up. And we'll give it another shot. But, you know, right now, they don't have a lot. They're not making progress through seven games of the season, I don't think. I don't see that considering, you know, where you would think they would be by this stage of the season. So it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, it's worth going back the first three games of the year. It's not like they were running all over people with Alex Bars. I think if I had a takeaway here from Notre Dame's offensive line is the concerns that we had immediately when Alex Bars got hurt, I think are being validated week by week by week.
No doubt. And I don't know how it could have been any other way.
Yeah.
Alex Bars was playing that well. He really was. Okay, two questions combined. One from ND Squid 23. Did Pittsburgh figure out the blueprint to defend the Irish offense under Ian Book? And then tying in with Cubster 11, should we assume Pittsburgh provided the blueprint to slow down Ian Book, 7 or 8 in the box and press coverage?
I would attack Notre Dame how Pittsburgh attacked Notre Dame until Notre Dame figured it out. But I would also say that I think Notre Dame sort of figured it out in the second half. So the blueprint, if you could somehow remove Notre Dame's knowledge of how to attack Pittsburgh in the second half and the way that Ian Book was successful getting the ball out to Fink and Boykin and Claypool, then yeah, I think that would be a good success. But I think Notre Dame has already sort of counterpunched on this one. So the blueprint, I think, had a shelf life of about 3 quarters. So yeah, they provided a blueprint that is already, I think, a little bit outdated.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, the quick game, obviously, Book throws the quick game really, really well. He's got some big receivers to throw to, and he's got an elusive one in Fink, and he's got some tight ends. I would like to see Elizé Mack catching the ball vertically as opposed to horizontally, because he doesn't seem to.
They were close.
Get a
they
lot of
almost got that.
Yeah, they don't get. You mean the one he overthrew?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was wide open, and Claypool was open on the next level. But you know, he doesn't. He's just better vertically, and so I think that's the best way to use him. The quick game, certainly in the passing game. You know, and you have to run, you have to have more design runs with Ian Book too. I mean, that's a part
I agree.
Of what you do. I think of the 16 runs, I counted four. I'm sure of it. I had four out of 16 that were actually
like
designed.
RPO keeper type.
Yeah, read option or design runs. Or just a quarterback draw or something like that. So that has to be a part of what you do as well, depending upon how they defense it. I will say this. You know, we can say, okay, use Pittsburgh's blueprint. Well, there are only a handful of teams that really want to play press coverage with their cornerback because that puts them on an island, and that's difficult to do. So you can't just say, hey, Pittsburgh ran press coverage. It worked. That's what Pat Narduzzi does. That's his DNA.
Yeah, and I think that really the blueprint for Pittsburgh was Notre Dame is not sure what we're doing. That's not really about schemes or guys in the box or what coverages you're playing. It's catching the opponent off guard and making them adjust. For somebody else to do what Pittsburgh did wouldn't catch Notre Dame off guard. And I thought the 21-yard slant to Claypool was a perfect example of how Notre Dame adjusted. And at that point, Pittsburgh's plan worked until it didn't. And that's when it stopped working because they brought eight guys. Claypool cut underneath. That should have been a 71-yard touchdown, not a 21-yard gain.
Exactly.
And it was an easy pitch and catch. Notre Dame knew how to attack Pittsburgh at that point. And I think really from that moment on in the game, Notre Dame, they certainly weren't in control because they were losing. But offensively, they had a rhythm there, and they did not really let up until the game was over.
Yeah, they had 151 yards in those two touchdown drives over the last 17 minutes. And they were stopped in there in between. But and Narduzzi actually even referred to kind of like the demarcation of the game, when they started to catch up a little bit. But it's difficult. I mean, you could say, to a large extent, you thought Virginia Tech might have had a blueprint too, and then Notre Dame exploded in the second half and ended up with 38 offensive points out of their 45. And so, keep in mind, Ian Book, four starts this year, five in his career, as good as he's looked. And amazingly, he completes 80% of his passes in that game.
He's number one nationally in completion percentage.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, he's doing okay, but there are still things. Look, if anybody can trick Ian Book, it's Pat Narduzzi. This guy is a great defensive mind and has been for a long time.
Twitter, way to go, K-Man. What caused Ian Book to play flustered and erratically in the first half?
Press coverage, poor pass protection, fourth start, great defensive mind in Narduzzi, midterm exams, emotional ups and downs following Stanford, Virginia Tech, false rumor of academic suspension.
You think he was like doing a makeup test or something on Wednesday?
I don't know, but let's throw that in there because that,
No Alex Bars.
No Alex Bars. I mean, I'm not making fun of the question. It's just that there are a multitude of reasons why a young quarterback can struggle. And I think just about all of those are pretty valid.
Yeah. I mean, I think that he looked very young on his first interception because that was like,
our vantage point was way better than his. That's a really tough read he had there.
I mean, it's just like the way the ball came out is you're like, oh, those are the passes that get intercepted. And sure enough, it got intercepted. I think in the first half, I don't know how deliberate it was, but I think Notre Dame took its time to try to figure out what Pittsburgh was doing and then adjust off of it from there. And if there hadn't been the kickoff return for the touchdown, it probably been a very comfortable adjustment in sort of sussing out what Pittsburgh wanted to do. When that kickoff came back, suddenly everything felt very tense. But I think of all the things you listed, Tim, start number four of the season would probably be the most important.
Right. We have a pair here from @training_Dave. What has happened to Dante Vaughn? He did not look good Saturday. And then from Brooksbeer1, I was surprised to see Tariq Bracey called upon in clutch situations. You see him getting more playing time in the second half of the season.
I mean, when in all of our spring practice, fall camp observations, when have you come out of a practice thinking like, man, Dante Vaughn looks really good? Physically, he looks amazing all the time, but just in terms of production-wise, I don't think that we've had a moment where you're like, he's really closing the gap on Troy Pride, or like he could really back up Julian Love.
And
we've never seen it.
No, and Brian Kelly said we have to just kind of disregard the fact that he doesn't have good cornerback technique and throw him out there. He flat out said that, and boy, has that really come into play. Even when he had good technique on the late touchdown by Virginia Tech, he didn't make the play being in the position to do that. Did you see the play where they took him out for good when he
got beat inside?
He got beat inside, and then you just can't do it. Then he gave up on the tackle.
That I thought was completely weird.
You just don't see guys do that very often. He just, like, frustration. I wrote it. He visibly, you could see his shoulders slump as he gave up on the play, and it was still live.
Yeah.
Yes. And that was, I believe that was the last snap that he had.
You're absolutely right about that. As far as the Tariq Bracey part of it, he was a guy I heard about in the summer. The coaches were, there's always a couple that are prospects that are, the coaches are higher on than sort of the general public or the recruiting rankings industry. Tariq Bracey was a guy that was called out in the summer to me as like, this guy I think is going to be pretty good. Does that mean they thought he's going to be your third corner in game eight? Probably not, but I think he has to be your third corner moving forward. I mean, to specifically answer the question, do you see him getting more playing time in the second half of the season? No, because Troy Pride will be healthy.
Right.
But I think as a third corner who can give you eight snaps a game.
Okay, so that's more playing time.
Yeah,
that's,
I guess
more
that is
playing time.
It's less playing time than last
week. Right.
But more than maybe what he got earlier in the year.
Can I point out that I know you remember Tariq Bracey was my top three-star pick, was the biggest sleeper. I loved the way he played. I just loved his coverage ability, but he's skinny. I mean, he is 170 pounds. You see him trying to make tackles? He had seven tackles.
Yeah.
He had to kind of just like wrestle them and spin them around and throw them down because he's not strong enough to just, you know, drive through them and wrap and tackle. But he's a good cover guy. He's a kid that had, coming out of high school, very, very natural coverage skills. And it's showing up now.
All right, next up, Irish GL. And I wish we had the audio of Brian Kelly's Sunday teleconference to splice into this, because Tim asked Brian Kelly about this. After Notre Dame sent eight different plays to the ACC in which no holding was called, what, in your opinion, was the most egregious no call?
That's a great question, because there's so many from which to choose.
And Notre Dame benefited from some of them.
What do you mean?
Of the egregious...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I tried to list those in the tail of the tape, too. I mean, there were bad calls on both sides. I mean, Bracey should have had a personal foul on the Pittsburgh sideline when he sent Pickett into the kicking net.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't call that one. I didn't think that Claypool deserved the pass interference on the deep ball that they called on Dane Jackson. Fortunately, that got Notre Dame's drive going. But defensive linemen get held all the time. Drew Tranquil was grabbed and thrown to the ground by Buxer. But Alex Buxer, that's how he blocked. He put a hand on the back of the guy and throw him down.
Yeah, I felt like I saw a lot of defensive linemen beat offensive linemen and then somehow end up on the ground. Like they got tackled from behind.
Would they slip on the turf or what?
Yeah, it's like they fell into their legs or something.
Do you have a most egregious?
So, I mean, I think the most egregious would either be the kickoff return touchdown where Jordan Genmark Heath.
I didn't even see that jersey. When I'm watching it.
I'll show you a photo on my computer. Like, I screenshot it. His jersey,
I saw it.
His jersey rises up so you can see his shoulder pads, and his number two, like, half of it is under his helmet. He's getting held that much. But the other one would probably be the play after the Chase Claypool PI. Tommy Kramer clearly holds at the point of attack, and that turns into Dexter Williams' 13-yard run, which is the only carry that went for longer than 4 yards. And that was part of the game-winning drive.
Alize Mack had a hold that they didn't call as well. And, you know, I kind of equated it to, like, basketball referees, at some point you have to call the fouls so you can stop it from happening. I mean, nobody wants to watch a football game with 25 penalties in it. I get that.
Yeah, it's like...
But then there has to be a conversation. The refs need to have a conversation with the head coaches and say, we are going to start throwing flags on all this crap. We can't let this continue on.
That's a good point. I think it needed to be managed better at the front end by the officiating crew, opposed to having... I would rather them do that than call everything. In the same way that... Did anyone really like watching Notre Dame Michigan State in 2013?
Like, oh, when they're all the PI calls? Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Also Pat Narduzzi.
Like,
that's just not a good product. But it just it needed to be managed better than it was by this crew.
Right. Spud Lover asks, evaluate Chip Long's performance as play caller so far this year.
I mean, if I put a grade on it, I'd probably go B plus.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a. So how do we evaluate Chip Long? When they score, when they average 46 a game, he's a good play caller. When they only score 19, he's a bad play caller.
The players have something to do with it. The first half against Michigan was great, and the second half wasn't. The first half against Virginia Tech and Pittsburgh weren't great, and the second halves were. So, I mean, is it more impressive to come up with the plan where you strike first and you force the other guy to adjust? Is it more impressive when you find solutions as the game is unfolding in 10 minutes opposed to having a whole week? I would say the latter is more impressive to me.
Well, or, you know, you just you score 70 like he thought, which is very difficult to do because the other team is practicing during the week. But, we both agreed, and I didn't. Pete said it to me on the field on the 4th-and-1 call.
That one I did not
to
like
ice the game, but I didn't have a good view of it, so I didn't react to what he said. And then I watched the replay of it, and like, man, I don't know what was supposed to happen there. Now Brian Kelly had a long, long conversation with Ian Book and actually really got his attention on the sideline when he was bending over and pulling up his socks. I don't know if you saw that, but. That play. I mean, I don't know what the only option was to throw it.
I think it was supposed to be Wisher, right, like immediately, and then Wisher got hit, and then Book.
He eventually got to the spot, and Book wasn't comfortable trying to squeeze it in at that.
It just seemed like a high. It was too high a degree of difficulty for that spot.
But you know what? I mean, it's 4th-and-1, so Book. I mean, if you're going to go for it, you can get picked there. I get. I mean, it's easy to say that it's okay to go ahead and try to force it because it's 4th down. But
I mean, it needs to be remembered and should never be forgotten that Notre Dame has changed quarterbacks after 3 games when they're 3-0. The offensive play caller had a ton to do with that. And the guy that they have in now has developed so much from what he was last year. He leads the nation in completion percentage. I think it's 13th in passing efficiency. They are running a very functional offense that has had a couple rough spots the last couple weeks, but Long has figured it out on the fly once against Bud Foster and another time against Pat Narduzzi. I think he's doing a really good job.
I do too. SR 5452, kind of a different way to look at it, but how would you guys attack the Notre Dame offense and the Notre Dame defense?
I mean, I would attack Notre Dame's offense the same way that Pittsburgh did.
I agree with that.
I would create a lot of traffic in the short passing game, and I think that's part of loading the box that I think maybe doesn't get recognized enough. It's like, if you're a short passing team and the other team is loading the box, they're not just taking away your run game, they're gumming up your short passing game because there's too many guys there. So I would do exactly what Pittsburgh did defensively. How I would attack Notre Dame's defense, I sure as hell wouldn't go for a deep passing game.
It's got to be a three-step drop game.
I don't know. I don't think there's a great approach. I guess I would run horizontally as much as I could, and I would figure out how I can match up Asmer Bilal and Tavon Coney in pass coverage situations. But that is such a small sliver of what to do.
Yeah. That's not something that you can isolate on a play-by-play basis.
That's like 5 plays in your game plan.
I generally, with what you're saying there, I generally agree. It's difficult. Notre Dame's got a great defense. Yep. It's going to be difficult to do that.
Wreckers 33 hot. Special teams has had some bad moments this year. Should those be blamed on Brian Pullian? He's been great in recruiting, but does Notre Dame need to consider replacing him this offseason?
299-yard kick returns have to be blamed on the special teams coordinator. I mean, he's not a position coach and special teams coordinator. That's his baby, and so those go his way. And as I don't know if we said this live or we were talking about before, that kick return took a split second to be set up. I go over it kind of step by step in the tail of the tape, but it was set up immediately. You mentioned the hold on Jim Markeith, but once French decided to kick it left, Notre Dame was in bad position immediately, and everybody had a bad angle. Gilman had a bad angle coming from the middle of the field. Fertitta had a bad angle coming from the opposite side of the field, which he couldn't do much about. and Jonathan Dorr isn't going to keep up with Maurice French.
I mean, I think they all have bad angles because the kick was at a bad angle.
Exactly.
I think it was...
It starts there.
On the tee. I asked Brian Kelly about this on Sunday, and I agree with him. Like, what they're getting out of Jonathan Dorr in terms of distance, in terms of location, in terms of hang time, is not good enough. And they have... I don't know what was up with Justin Yoon. He sort of like...
Cringed a little bit on that second kickoff. That's not good.
You have to go with him moving forward. And it's like, even if you're just placing your kicks inside the five or at the 10, but like leaving them in corners, that's what you have to do.
I'd give him another week.
Just booting it with Dorr. I mean, more than 10%, or exactly 10% basically, of kickoffs from Jonathan Dorr that are fielded are returned for touchdowns. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
that is an absurd statistic.
That I guess I'd like them to preserve Yoon for maybe another week, which they probably can. If Navy returns a kickoff for a touchdown against you, you got big problems. That's not going to happen.
Well, I mean, then they'll win 45-12. But, like, it just is a situation where they cannot go the rest of the season. Like, at USC, I don't want to see Jonathan Dorr on kickoffs.
No, no doubt. No doubt by the time you get to USC. I understand directional kicking and that being difficult to do, because as soon as you start angling it toward the sideline, then you kick it out of bounds, so you don't want that. I don't understand the distance part. Now, there was not a wind issue in Notre Dame Stadium that I'm aware of this past Saturday, so I don't understand why everybody does. And that kid, I've said it a million times, I mean, that kid's 6'3", I don't know what he weighs, but he's a big strapping kid, and I don't understand why he can't consistently kick football out of the end zone. The kicker for Pittsburgh can.
3-for-3. I mean, I went back and looked at, because the whole, like, why can't you just kick it out of the end zone? I'm like, all right, I know that's sort of like the fan quick reaction. But after looking at the numbers based on, like, what Notre Dame is getting, it's so easy to kick out. So Notre Dame has returned 8 kickoffs all year.
That's what I'm saying. So that's team after
it's
team
absurd.
After team. I would rather see Dorr, you know, Yoon came in and kicked a line drive that bounced. I would rather see that because at least it's difficult to handle and it throws the timing of the return off.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Notre Dame has returned 8 kickoffs all year. Of the past 18 kickoffs, Notre Dame has had 15 go for touchbacks. So it's not a situation where kicking the ball out of the end zone is all that difficult to do for everyone Notre Dame plays. Therefore, it shouldn't be difficult for Notre Dame to do themselves, in my opinion.
At Struggle Bus Gus, greatest threat to an undefeated season, a remaining opponent or Notre Dame's remaining travel schedule? Kind of tied in together.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the answer really is Notre Dame itself. We talked about it, I think, in segment one. If Notre Dame plays a Pittsburgh-style performance against, I think, any of the last four opponents, I would take Navy out of the mix, but any of those last four could beat Notre Dame if Notre Dame played the way that it did against Pittsburgh. So whether that's travel or whether that's the opponents, I'm not really sure what's what. Are midterms harder than 3 trips to the coast in 4 weeks or 5 weeks? Maybe. But I think ultimately, like, Notre Dame is in control of the situation. If they play a Stanford-style or a Virginia Tech-style performance, they'll be fine. But if they play Pittsburgh-style, they won't.
Imagine, you know, before the season, somebody saying, okay, well, Notre Dame will go to the playoffs. All they have to do is win 4 of their last 5 games on the road. I mean, you know, they've struggled so much. And what they did at Virginia Tech was very, very impressive. You know, I don't think they're going to go into a real difficult environment at Northwestern per se.
It's going to be like a neutral site game.
Yeah, right. And, you know, obviously San Diego, although they have a base out there.
I don't know
that they'll make enough noise to...
I believe I heard someone talking up how Navy had moved the game to San Diego for an increased home field advantage because of the naval base out there. And I'm just like, that's not going to cut it for a reason why it's going to be a hostile environment.
Right. Somebody asked, where would you like to go see a Notre Dame Navy game? I'd like to see a Notre Dame Navy game at Navy.
Yes. Yeah.
Annapolis, that would be really cool.
I think that would be amazing.
That would be cool. But to get back to the question, man, I don't know. They're tied together. I mean, I I'm going to go back to Florida State giving up 2.7 yards per carry. Okay, so we could. So how's Notre Dame going to handle that offensively if they can't run the football? So I mean, that could be a problem.
They'll throw it 50 times.
Yeah, well, they will
in late November at night in South Bend. What could go wrong? All right, Elkman 1966. If Notre Dame is undefeated going into the Syracuse game and loses, will they fire Jack Swarbrick on the tarmac? Or let him come back to South Bend.
I think even Jack would get a kick out of that question. One of us should pose that to him.
We go for it.
I'll go for it.
No, O'Malley can do it.
Yeah, that would be, you know. But why don't you talk to? I mean, we've discussed this, but you had the interview with him last summer, and he said he has to serve two constituencies in making that decision.
I think he is very. I wouldn't say that he's uncomfortable with this game, but I wouldn't say he's comfortable with it either. I mean,
the thoughts cross his mind, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, the before the season, before Notre Dame was 7-0, before Notre Dame could be 10-0 going to Syracuse and ranked in the top four of the college football playoff, before all that, he was like, this is pushing the limits of, like, smart scheduling for a football program. For a independent school that wants to be everywhere at all times, it is smart scheduling. But as he said, like, he's serving multiple constituencies, and in this instance he gave a little to the university and probably asked a little bit more from football than he would have liked to have asked. But it will be a very tense Saturday afternoon at Yankee Stadium for him, especially if Notre Dame is 10-0.
Who was it that said, somebody asked him, you know, what do we have to do to get an easier or lightened up schedule? And his response was, get a different athletic director.
At least he has a sense of humor about it.
Yes, that he does. It'll be interesting because Notre Dame absolutely should be going to New York City with a 10-0 record. And our final question is from Irish Guy, the familiar refrain, if not now, when?
I mean, they have to make the playoffs this year because they're going to struggle to take a run at it next year. And at that point, you just don't really know what's beyond. Like, 2 years from now is an eternity. That's college football in a nutshell. So if not now, in terms of making the playoffs, I don't know when. I don't know when their next best opportunity would be. O'Malley and I were talking about this on the way back to our cars on Saturday night after the game. That, I mean, if Notre Dame let's say Notre Dame loses at Northwestern, they finish 11-1, they don't make the playoff, they go to the Fiesta Bowl, they draw Washington, and they win. And so they finish 12-1. I don't think anyone is going to sit there walking out of whatever that University of Phoenix Stadium or whatever it is in Glendale and think, man, what a disappointing season. But when it comes to making the playoff, it's hard to look at that outcome now and not feel a little bit disappointed if you're a Notre Dame fan, just because this is this feels closer to me than it did last year, based on the way the schedule shakes out, based on the way the offense is moving, based on the way the defense is playing. It feels like it is much closer and much closer to a reality for Notre Dame right now than it was last year. And if they don't get it this year, I don't know when it's going to happen.
But as you said, those last four games, I mean, they can lose any one of those last four games.
Yeah, but I think that's really the bucket of cold water that got dumped on your head after the Pittsburgh game is like, those games didn't come after Virginia Tech. I didn't really feel like there was going to be much of a question about what happened in November outside of USC. And now it's like, there's Florida State, and like I could.
You know why that? You know why that is? Because every 7 days we reevaluate the way we look at a football team. Every team in the country, every 7 days we reevaluate the way we look at them.
Well, isn't like you felt Wake Forest, then they go to Stanford, they built on Wake Forest. Then they go to Virginia Tech, you felt like they built on Stanford and Wake Forest. And then they go to Pittsburgh, and you feel like it was just like, it was like the stock market came down. That doesn't mean that it won't go back up, but it was not sort of your linear rocket ride to outer space here in terms of tournament football.
Right. I did. You saw I used your linear to line, which I absolutely love. Somebody, I was asked on live TV after the Pittsburgh game, well, is this really a playoff team? It's like...
Today?
Well, I mean, so the last 3 weeks didn't happen? You just can't ignore... It can't be an instant gratification analysis every 7 days. It's a cumulative effect. Now, when you start suffering injuries and things like that, they add up. But yeah, absolutely, it's still a playoff team. They've just got to regroup. They got a week off, and they got to get better than they were against Pittsburgh. But so if they blow out Navy and then go to Northwestern and handle, and then Pittsburgh didn't happen, well, that happened too.
Yeah,
and you can revert back to that at some point.
And I think it's worth keeping in mind, was Clemson a playoff team when they almost lost to Syracuse at home? Was Ohio State a playoff team when they were dead at Penn State and came back to win? I mean, was Ohio State even a playoff team last weekend against Minnesota when I think they were up maybe seven?
Six points at the end of the third quarter, okay. I believe it was.
Probably not. I mean, was Clemson a playoff team when they almost lost to Texas A&M? No. So playoff teams don't look like playoff teams 12 or 13 straight times. Notre Dame has probably had a few more not looking like a playoff teams than it would be natural for a playoff team. But I think we all sort of excused Vanderbilt and Ball State because of the quarterback change, whereas Pittsburgh felt like it got lumped in and made the Ball State and Vanderbilt games a little bit more relevant. I really didn't think we would be to that point anymore where Notre Dame would have that kind of a performance where there was like legit game pressure and you're like, they might lose to a bad Pittsburgh.
I certainly thought that it was the kind of game where, you know, it was a 10-point, 14-point game. I didn't think they'd be trailing for 40 minutes.
Like if the Pittsburgh game, if you packaged up everything that happened and moved it to Evanston, I wouldn't think twice about that performance being an indicator or predictor of anything that happened, because I think Northwestern's good enough to do that to you and muddy up the game and then like you escape and like, great, it's you win on the road. That's awesome. Everything's good. The fact that it happened at home at Pittsburgh again, midterms, the playoff rankings are going to come out and we're not going to be talking about the Pittsburgh game. I think that's ultimately what that's the reality.
Absolutely.
That
and we go through this every year. We go through this every year. We're all and
after 2 decades, why haven't we learned?
And the nation remains shocked. They shouldn't be. I will say this. If they get to the playoffs, if you want to win a national title, it would be nice to have somebody else beat Alabama. Now, granted, you would have to play that team then. But you would be playing that team after having to beat Alabama, so you would benefit from that. So, okay, that's enough for today. We will take the week off. Just a reminder again, we'll take the week off. No podcast on Thursday. We'll be back Monday, October 22nd, presumably with the three-man team of Priester, O'Malley, and Sampson. This has been the latest update on, this has been the latest Irish Illustrated Insider brought to you by Catanzari Financial Services. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. Go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.